know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. If you don't yet, don't know what you're doing, but you can get your copy of NBA 2K24 in the description of the show. BJ, it's Friday today. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling like Friday, Mo. I'm feeling like Friday.
It's been a long week.
And you know the vibe. So yes, sir. That means things are about to start.
Yes, sir. And you know what a Friday means. We answer some great questions submitted by our family of listeners, our Discord community. They've sent in some things that they want to know the answers to. So we're going to answer your questions. If you want your question answered, join the Discord, also linked in the description of the show. Come and join the conversation. The first question is from Andy Williams. Shout out to Andy, regular listener, and regular, I think he submits a question every time we ask. So shout out to Andy. He says, with this year's rookie class, including the non-contending for this year, Wembanyama, and the very much contending Chet, what are the best lessons that any rookie can take away? Take Keontae George as an example. He's on a middling to bad team, but has been a real bright spot. Not everyone can make the conference finals in their rookie year, BJ. Shout out to Andy. He knows his history.
Shout out.
What's the biggest lesson a rookie could take away from their rookie year?
The biggest lesson you can learn is, you know, I think the one thing that no one really ever prepares you for is how tough the NBA season is, let alone the players that you're playing against. But it's an 82-game season. It's the first time you've ever played this many games in this condensed amount of times. You're playing virtually four games every week, travel, you know, home and away and all those things. And I just think the biggest thing you can take away is, yes, physically you have to be prepared, but mentally, that was the most difficult year probably of my basketball career. It was my rookie year because I was just tired all the time. I couldn't believe how tough the season was, like, let alone the games and the players I was playing against. And it seemed like it was just a game after game. And the one thing that I vividly remember was I never felt good. Like, you know how you go and sometimes you just feel good?
Yeah, that's me for the last 10 years, BJ. I've not felt good in 10 years.
I never felt good. Like, I never felt like I had my legs under me. I never felt like physically I was, like, I always had something that was hurt. Like, you know, you knee in the thigh one night. You got hit in the shoulder one night. Your back was a little stiff. Sometimes, you wake up and your ankle is stiff. And you're like, what happened? Yep. You know what I mean? Like, you never feel good. And so learning how to play 82 games and you're never 100% healthy, that was so difficult for me my rookie season. But then I just kind of learned that was just part of the process. So, you know, shout out to that question because it's just tough. It's tough playing in the NBA. And mentally, probably more than physically, is what I learned. And that was a valuable lesson for me my rookie year.
Okay. Freddie K wants to know, how did BJ find Orlando when he was there?
I loved Orlando. So it was a great city. It was, you know, I'd always played in cold weather climates, you know, in Chicago. And to be able to play in a warm weather climate like Orlando.
Well, I mean, you hit San Francisco first.
Yeah, but it's not people. San Francisco is not exactly warm.
Should I tell them what happened at NBA Finals? I turned up for the NBA Finals. Okay. I'm like, we're going to the West Coast. We're going to California. I did not pack. I just packed T-shirts. The only jacket I had was the blazer that I would wear for TV. I get to San Francisco at like 5 p.m. The sun is out and I'm freezing cold in June. Yeah.
Yes.
So I had to go to the mall. I had to go to the mall like a real American. And I had to go and buy a jacket in San Francisco in the summer. And then we went to Boston and it was 10 times warmer in Boston than it was in San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco is a little tricky because it's Northern California and it gets a little chilly up there, especially at night. So it's California, yes. You know, it doesn't snow like it does on the East Coast here, but it's not particularly warm, like Southern California. And it's a little tricky. So, you know, playing in Orlando was really the first place where it was just warm all the time. So I really enjoyed Orlando. People were great, and they have a good fan. Fan base down there.
What was it like playing for the Orlando Magic organization? You know, the management, the coaches, and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so two of my favorite people, coaches I've ever played for in the business, Coach Sir, who I literally talk to him even to this day 5 times a day.
We got to get him back on the show at some point.
Yeah. Coach Sir is so that I played for him. I played against him for many years when he was coaching up there for the Detroit Pistons. And then I played for him. And then, you know, the late Chuck Daly, he was incredible. He was just an incredible coach to be able to play for. I thoroughly enjoyed playing. I wish I was younger and had a chance to play for him. He was just terrific, great personality. And he had a sense of like just how to deal with people. So I really enjoyed my time there. It was a very positive experience. I just wish I was younger. I was kind of later in my career at that particular time, but I really enjoyed my time, enjoyed the people. And it was top notch. I've always thought Orlando has been a really good organization down there from when they first came in the league. I think they came in the league right around the same time that I entered into the league. We might have entered the league the same year. 1989, right? Was it 89?
Yeah. But 1889, you were there in 99.
Yes. Yeah. So I was there and it was good. I really enjoyed my time there.
Yeah. Well, this week we saw some poster dunks. Anthony Edwards had a huge dunk. Of the dunks of the year, as he does. But Pierce McGlinchey, shout out to Pierce, always sending in questions. He says, what is your favorite ever poster dunk?
My favorite dunk when I was a kid was the Dr. J dunk that he did. I think it was in the NBA Finals. But it's an iconic dunk, and he did it. Michael Cooper looked like he was going to try to chase him down, and then he goes to block the shot, and then he just eventually just ducked and kind of bowed out. You know, Dr. J just reminds me of my childhood, and I've seen some incredible dunks. But that particular dunk, along with any dunk really Dr. J did, because you didn't get a chance to see every highlight like you do today. So I remember as a kid, we saw that on the news, right? The local news. And every kid, that's all we talked about. Did you see that?
It's like one hand, he's cradling the ball. Yeah, and it's like basically a windmill with one hand.
Yes.
I'm sure Bart will clip up the clip for social media when we.
Yes, so Dr. J was my favorite dunker of all time.
My favorite poster dunk, a little bit of a not too famous. You know, a lot of people will say LeBron and Jason Terry or Anthony Edwards or whoever. If you go on YouTube and you type in, we just saw a man fly, J.R. Smith had one of the nastiest poster dunks because he literally took flight. Someone was down below him trying to take a charge. And if you ever see J.R. Smith, we just saw a man fly. I remember seeing that. And I must have gone and worked on plyometrics for way too long and burnt out my knees. the next question, LJC, a little troll question here. He says, what's your dream broadcast team? For me, it's Skip Bayless, Ovi Soko, and Jeff Teague with Ennis Freedom as the sideline reporter.
Yeah, that's really funny. Who said that? That's really funny, actually.
LJC, shout out to the Discord.
That might
be the worst broadcast team of all time.
That's really funny.
Should I tell you the dream broadcast team? It's okay. Mo Mutsi commentary, BJ Armstrong and Scott Perry on color commentary, and Taylor Rooks on the sideline. I think that would be a pretty good commentary team.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with you. I mean, that would be good. That would be fun. And
that'd be a good studio show as well. ESPN, TNT, any TV networks listening.
It would be fun. We would have a lot of fun.
Who's your favorite broadcasters, BJ? I know you're a big fan of Hubie Brown.
Yeah, Hubie. I enjoyed listening to Hubie. You know how I love listening to... I think I've mentioned this to you before. I love listening to Gus Johnson.
Yep. He has some iconic calls.
He has iconic calls. As a kid, I loved Howard Cosell. I just loved Howard Cosell.
I think Mike Breen has the iconic bang, but I think Kevin Harlan just has such a cool voice. That.
Yeah, Kevin Harlan. Okay. I love Kevin Harlan, and I'm friends with Kevin Harlan. Kevin Harlan is phenomenal. He's phenomenal. I mean, he's a pro. But my favorite version of Kevin Harlan, when he used to call the local games for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And Kevin Harlan and Trent Tucker, who I played with, they used to call the games for the early, and they were the one of, I think they might have been the one who coined the name the Big Ticket. Okay. Kevin Harlan, he's toned his act down, if you will, for the national television. But when he was on local television, he had his own vocabulary that only the local people understood. Mm-hmm. And you would tune in and you had to figure out what he was saying and how he was saying it. And he had nicknames and he had like his whole like vocabulary that was great. Like, you know, he used to be, I think one of my favorite calls was Kevin Garnett would dunk with such authority when he was young, right? I mean, he would just dunk and scream and whatever. Kevin Harlan would just make the call and the ticket has gone mad. And and he had these iconic things that only the local people knew.
What area was he on?
He was doing the local broadcast for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay.
Just like his name, Dale Curry for the Charlotte.
Eric Collins, the Charlotte Hornets guy who goes crazy. Yes, see, that's not my cup of tea when I'm watching a game. This is a little too much, but I get why people like it. Not for 48 minutes.
I love it.
Do you know who I like?
Who's that?
The Raptors commentator, Jack. His catchphrases. When someone dunks, he goes, "Hello." And when they block someone, he goes, "Get garbage out of here.
Get that shot out of here.
Get that garbage out of here." He's pretty funny.
Tommy Heinsohn was one of my favorites. Tommy Heinsohn was one of my favorites. The late Johnny Red Kerr, who used to do the Bulls games, he was a favorite of mine as well. George Blaha now for the Detroit Pistons. And shout out to George. George is going to retire here probably in a year. George Blaha, I have never listened to the Detroit Pistons without George Blaha broadcasting the game.
Yeah, shout out to Mike Gorman as well. Same with the Celtics. This is final year.
Yeah, so George Blaha started doing the games when I was literally started listening to the games on television on the local broadcast in Detroit. That was in the, like, literally 1980s. And George Blaha, I've never listened to a Piston game and George Blaha has not been the play-by-play, which has been unbelievable. So he's just one of my favorites because that's all I know is George Blaha and the Detroit Pistons.
Absolutely. We got another question. Oh, it's not really a question. Tally Wakane says, this isn't a question, but I just wanted to say thanks to BJ for sharing his grandmother's story on yesterday's pod. He's got a great storytelling ability and his emotion he shares is amazing.
Hey, no, thank you. No, I appreciate it. And, you know, it's funny when you're here and you have this public life. And the one thing that, you know, that I said when I committed to doing this podcast was you got to be real. And one of the things as a player, you play and you have your professional face, but you know, more you have these things and these lessons, and it's always, you know, there's a fine line between your public life and your private life, and you try to separate it, but this is who you are.
The NBA is my whole life. I've been chilling at the crib. Oh, Mo, you coming up to bed? Hell no, I'm watching the game.
who asked you that, Mo? Wait a minute, Mo.
Hey. I thought there was a line, BJ. I thought there was a line.
Wait a minute. Okay, all right.
Shout out to some great people. That's all I'll say. Moving on.
Yes, we are.
Big Con says, why isn't Derek Lively getting more appreciation this season? A huge part of why Dallas will, in brackets, hopefully be in the playoffs rather than a play-in. And just in the last week, he held Wemby to his worst shooting performance and matched up really well with Jokic on Sunday. BJ, I did the game on Sunday, the Mavericks and the Nuggets. He did a fantastic job. It was one of the worst games I've seen the Joker have. Derek Lively has been sensational. He leads all rookies in field goal percentage. He's one of the youngest players in the entire NBA. He's the perfect big to play with Luka. I know you sent JaVale McGee to the Mavericks a while ago, but he's just 20 years younger than JaVale McGee at this point. Right? Respect to JaVale.
That's my guy, JaVale.
He's blocking shots on defense. He's screening and rolling to the hoop. And now he's developing that ability to pass out of the role to find his teammates who are cutting as well along the baseline. I've been really impressed with Derek Lively's performance this season. Why isn't he getting more love on the national stage? Is it just because they've already got 2 7-foot guys in Wemby and Chet that everyone's talking about all the time?
Well, I think you nailed it right there. And I think as he continues to play and perform at this level, I think he will get recognized. One thing I will say is I've in talking to people around the league, certainly, you know, he's grabbed the attention of a lot of people in the league. So he's without questions on the radar. But he isn't getting a lot of acknowledgement from the media. So, you know, he's been terrific. Sometimes things work. And when it works, it works. So, you know, shout out to him, what he's done, and more importantly, being prepared for the moment.
Yeah. Well, the media, we're right here. We're better than whatever other media you got. So stay locked in. Matt McD4 says, the biggest big three disappointment in recent years. Seeing the Suns be frauds this season with a stacked roster, does the big three work because it hasn't in recent seasons? No team has managed to work it out yet. Smokey, well, I like him. I like that question.
You know, well, I like the question. I think here's, and I said this early, when they put together this team, it was kind of like thrown together, but I'm not sure it was the team, if given a choice, the one that they would have, you know, finished with, you know, like, okay, you got these three guys. And then all of a sudden they just kind of grouped other guys together, you know, and because of financial constraints, we had injuries. We can't forget Bradley Beal has missed a significant part of the season.
Yeah.
Devin Booker has missed some part of the season. And I'm not sure if this is the finished product that they were saying, this is the big three.
Yeah, because you look at the depth of big three teams that have won, right? You look at the Celtics big three. You had guys like Eddie House, James Posey, Leon Powell, PJ Brown, all these veteran experienced players coming off the bench. You look at the Miami Heat big three. You have guys like Shane Battier, Ray Allen, Mike Miller. These are great veterans who are later on in their career, but they're invaluable into success, you know, because with a big three, you've spent most of your salary cap. Whereas the Suns, you look at them, I guess Eric Gordon, but then other than Eric Gordon, obviously you've got Nurkic and Grayson Allen in your starting lineup. But with the rest of the roster, shout out to them for just signing Isaiah Thomas. But aside from that, you don't have a lot of veterans there. You know, you've not got a lot of experience there. And it's tough for guys who aren't experienced to be able to, or guys who aren't later in their career to be able to sit back and take that role on.
And I'm not sure how it complements those guys. Like, and the one thing, listen, I know they're playing Bradley Beal and Booker at whatever is some lead guard position, but I think they got to figure that out. Both of these guys, to me, they're scoring.
Do you think the Suns would have been better with Chris Paul at point guard and Kevin Durant and Devin Booker rather than trading for Bradley Beal?
At this stage of your career with Chris Paul, at this stage, you know, it's about injuries and it's about availability. You know, I don't think that's a fair question because Chris Paul has, you know, he's been injury prone for the last couple of years. But when Chris Paul is healthy, even now, he's a very valuable player. The problem is he's just not able to stay healthy.
But you say that. Bradley Beal hasn't been able to stay healthy. KD and Booker both have injuries.
I know,
as well.
But because of age, you got to, you know, listen, if given an option, you're going to take the younger guy. And right now, Bradley Beal is a younger guy. So I agree with that. But Bradley Beal, I mean, what is Chris Paul? Chris Paul's what, it got to be 36, 37 now here. So you got to take a chance.
38.
38 years old. So, I mean, There you go. I mean, you have to take a chance on the youth, and Bradley Beal, I'm going to take that chance.
So who's the most disappointing big three in recent years?
Well, I would say the team that was in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that big three, you know, when they got James Harden and those guys, it put a lot of pressure. Everyone was talking about their team, and it just never materialized. It just never happened for that group.
They're going to kill me in the comments on Instagram, but the Miami Big Three promised us 8 championships and only delivered 2.
Well, yeah.
What do you call that, a disappointment?
I don't call it a disappointment because...
I'm just messing.
I know. And the reason I don't is because, I mean, I get it. Like, you know, everyone talks about winning the championship. Everyone, what they're going to do, and that's fine. But I'm going to tell you something. Winning is really, really hard. And, I mean, I can't imagine what it would mean to win, like, 8 championships. Like, first of all, you got to be incredibly talented. You got to have amazing amount of depth to do that. Because you're playing, that's over 100 games just in the playoffs to do, you know what I mean? So that's another whole season condensed into, you know, 8 years. You know, you're playing 100 extra games in 8 years, right? In addition to the 82. And
you got to hope loads of players don't leave and you draft the right guys, you sign the right guys. Who really disappointed me recently?
Who's this?
The Philadelphia 76ers big three. Because we've got Embiid coming off an MVP season. We've got James Harden led the league in assists last year and Tyrese Maxey poised for a breakout year. And we just don't see it because James Harden demands to leave over the summer.
I didn't look at them as a big three because Maxey wasn't a big three yet.
Oh, but we knew that he was going to be this guy.
Well, yeah, we knew, but he didn't do it yet. No, you know what I mean? He's like, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not going to revisit. You know what? How I think of him. Maxey, I was saying that all along, but I didn't ever look at them as a big three. And just where James Harden was at in his career and how Doc Rivers plays, I didn't think it was a good fit. He put up good numbers. I thought, I think he led the league in assists that year, right?
And he had some huge performances in the playoffs, even without Embiid.
But I just thought it was a tough fit. I never looked at that as a big three.
Well, Josh93 has asked a really interesting question, but I don't think we'll have time for that. I might need a whole episode. So Josh, we'll get to that during the week. Appreciate each and every one of you who sent your questions in. If you want your questions answered, make sure you join the Discord server. The link is in the description below. Some of you guys have hit me up saying you don't really understand how Discord works. It's simple. I promise. You just hit the link, sign up, join, click one of the emojis to get access to the server so we know you're not a spam bot, and then come and join the party. But we'll be back on Monday with more basketball talk, BJ, another week closer to the NBA playoffs beginning.
I just want to say this, and this is another one.
Shouts to DJ Khaled, huh? Another one. Yeah, another one in the books. Another week in the books. But BJ, we passed 450 episodes earlier this week, and I didn't even know
about that.
What was it last week?
Well, congratulations. You still put up with me, so I appreciate you.
Hey, man, I appreciate you. I appreciate all the listeners. That's who we do this for. That's the most important part of it.
Yes,
and we got to do something special for episode 500. We got to do something special for episode 500. Because 500 is a lot of damage. I read somewhere that if you go beyond episode 20 with your podcast, you're automatically in the top 1% of podcasts in the world because most podcasts give up before they even reach 20 episodes. We're about to hit 500. Then we're going to hit 1,000. Then we're going to hit whatever's next. And we're going to stay here. So we appreciate each and every one of you who takes the time out of your day to tune in and listen to us talking about the NBA. Because that's what we love to do. And we love to do it for you guys. Subscribe, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. Most importantly, until next time, you've heard it over 450 times. Get buckets.